Hello everyone, or should I say, hola. Welcome to season 8 of TGI. And guess where we are again?
Out of all the places in the world you could be, why MWC Barcelona? Everything is connectivity. Connectivity brings us together.
This is a must not miss.
Magnificent things are on the way.
Welcome to The Great Indoors, a podcast where we look at the technological implications brought about by the next industrial revolution and how this can potentially help solve the biggest problems facing humanity. I'm your host, Matt Roberts, and joining me as ever is my co-pilot and producer, Larissa Yee. So TGI The Great Indoors is back in Barcelona at MWC 2024, and it's bigger and better than ever. Over 101,000 unique in-person attendees from over 205 countries, nearly 3,000 exhibitors, sponsors, and partners, with over 1,100 speakers and thought leaders on the stage. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And I have to say, no bias here, but the Amdocs booth and our TGI recording studio are simply stunning. Stunning. Check it out on our website to see the videos. And that's not the only thing that's stunning. Our guests for this season are just out of this world. Never have we had such an amazing lineup. So over the coming weeks of this season, we will be bringing you actual conversations recorded from the biggest telecom show on the planet. And every single one is incredible. Now, to kick things off today, I am joined by, I would say, a friend, a frequent flyer of TGI, a supporter of the show. Her name is Laura Dewar, and this is her third time to TGI in her role as the Chief Marketing Officer at the GSMA, who, of course, puts on this amazing show. Now, for those of you that haven't heard Laura on this show before, her role at the GSMA involves steering the global marketing strategies that underpin the organization's mission to unify and advance the mobile industry. Now, Laura is best characterized by having a deep understanding of the dynamic global market landscape and a commitment to leveraging technology to address societal challenges all over the world. Laura is a champion of diversity and inclusion in the tech industry and is consistently and constantly advocating for policies and practices that support equitable opportunities for everybody. Her leadership at the GSMA not only reflects her professional acumen, but also her dedication to making a positive impact on the global telecommunications landscape. I'm so happy that we're kicking it off this time with Laura. She's fantastic. So stay tuned for that conversation. And then I am joined by Natalia Olsen Otreco and Hugh Pickford-Wardle from Startup Sherpas. And we met them fortuitously on the last day of the show. And they have an incredible story, an incredible venture that really impacts the youth of today and getting them into telecommunications. Anyway, first things first, I'd like to welcome back Laura to TGI today. So welcome back to MWC 2024 here in beautiful Barcelona. And I'm really excited to welcome back for the third time the GSMA's CMO, Laura Dewar.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah. And joining me is Gil Rosen, our CMO, who's been co-hosting several of the episodes so far this week. So it's always great to have Gil on board.
And hosting the show is and Matt. Hosting.
Oh, wow, yes. Yes, I can't even remember my name anymore. So that was good that you prompted me on that, Gil. So Laura, let's begin. Let's dig in. How's the week been?
The week's been absolutely mad, which is, I think, exactly what we want for MWC. This edition is the biggest since pre-pandemic, yeah. And we're very, very proud of it. The halls are busy. The content program is, you know, it's spinning. It's incredible. And the ministerial program, which is kind of behind a veil because it's an invite-only program is also just, you know, we're just blowing the doors off of it.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's an absolutely incredible. And you reference it there, Laura, that, you know, when the pandemic hit, that's when we started the podcast, but everything stopped. And we talked about it, you and I, we've talked about it several times over the years. Is everything going to return back to full capacity? And it is. It's bigger and better than ever. And I think that's a credit to you and credit to the GSMA, because I have to say, not all the regular events we attend survived, right?
Yeah.
Even now.
I can definitely feel the energy, which is different than the year before and the year before that. And I think it's not only post-COVID, it's even pre-COVID, it's probably one of the most energetic shows that I've been in. And it's also the evolution of the industry beyond the single connectivity connection theme. And I think that's super interesting. You know, I'm going to ask you the obvious question, of course, and I know what the answer is, but I think we should dive into it more. What is the topic that is, I think, on everybody's, not minds, but on everybody's floors here?
IoT, is it?
Well, it's AI. Does that surprise you?
No.
Not at all. No. It's everywhere, isn't it? It's the most profound thing. We have 260-ish sessions across 18 platforms. And of those 260, 50 of them formally are about AI. And then there's thousands of informal conversations going on regarding AI as well. And lots of innovation on the show floor.
Yeah, you know, so Amdocs, we're all in on generative AI. And, you know, I'm not going to talk specifically about what we do. But the thing is, which is striking in my mind, is that when I think about last year, 23, and this year, and the difference that... And the delta from what we showed last year to what we show this year, for me, it feels like 5 years have passed. The amount of innovation that we've been able to inject into our suite, and the amount of innovation that we can even inject into legacy Amdocs and even non-Amdocs products with our generative AI platform, Amaze, is profound. And I think what's profound about it, and I'll be glad to hear your take, is... it's not just like our industry's development. This is like a society-changing technology. What do you think?
Completely. We did a graph for a presentation we were working on when we looked at adoption of certain kinds of technologies over the years and how long it took to get to 100 million users. And ChatGPT was 2 days. We also said in the same context, we used to plan like a short-term plan was like 6 months to 2 years, and a long-term plan was 5 to 10. Of course, in recent times, we look less at the long-term because 5 years seems like such a long horizon. But that short-term horizon is now like it's 6 months.
Yeah.
In fact, long-term horizon is almost 6 months from a technology perspective. Maybe not a strategic one, but the pace of technology is breathless.
We were talking just before this got started about Sora. And 3 or 4 weeks ago, it wasn't there. And we were thinking maybe one thing about the development of movie making, knowing generative AI, and then Sora shows up and shows you the capabilities, or just the beginning of the capabilities, and you realize what you thought was like nothing compared to what will be possible. So it's like, it's mind-blowing, and it's not just communication, it's industry, it's all verticals, and we support all of them. That's why we, I think, are super important.
Yeah, of course. And actually on the show floor represented attendees, for example, 30,000 companies represented, 60% of those are outside of the core mobile ecosystem. So that's a reflection that the things that are occurring now, the innovations that are happening, require at least collaboration and partnership, and probably more than two entities, sometimes three. It's incredible.
I have a question for you. I believe we get it. I can tell you from a company perspective, we're all in. Do you feel that all the companies, and as an industry, because you don't have to name names, but does everybody get it? Or is it still, do you need to still push people to do it faster or to even accept the fact that this is game-changing?
I think everyone gets that it's game-changing. I think there's still polar opposite ends of a conversation where we're concerned about the implications of a technology we don't completely understand yet, through to early adopters who, to your point, they're like all in and just making cool things happen. And I think that's where the GSMA comes into an ecosystem and says, let's help sort out this conversation. Let's bring some examples of where things are being done really well, but let's also make sure that we're having the conversation around what's responsible and ethical in this new landscape. And so for us, that's where we find meaning and purpose in the work that we do.
Is it not, this was something I heard Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, talk about in Davos. And I don't know if you guys have looked at this, Lara, but the thing that excited him the most, we talk about how quickly it got to get to 100 million users. But when you look at those Schumpeter jumps in innovation that affect just global living standards, typically it'll always take, so for example, the Industrial Revolution that started in the United Kingdom then took 200 years to reach India, right? Then the internet was created and took 10 years to reach India in any meaningful format. And it wasn't until mobile internet that it really proliferated in India. And this was his example. The interesting thing about generative AI and ChatGPT is it took, again, weeks now to reach the people in India who are using it, building on top of it, changing the way of their ways of life. So it's the adoption, but where the adoption is happening as well, it's much more equalized. Is that something that you've witnessed and seen?
I think that's a true observation. I think we are also, though, concerned as an organization about the 3.2 billion people on the planet who have coverage and access to the mobile internet but don't use it. And there are root causes to that. And we as an organization want to ensure that as we move forward with this technology or any technology, even just the acceleration of digitization, that we're not leaving people behind. So we have a very significant focus ourselves as an organization and all of our mobile operators really around how do we address that usage gap. And the underlying factors range from affordability of handsets. So that's the hardware part of the problem.
Yeah.
And then literacy, relevancy of content, which is could be solved with AI.
Mm-hmm.
So think about app development and how you could accelerate it in multiple languages and contexts.
Yes.
Using this technology. So I think it's interesting. We don't want the usage gap to persist. We want to address it. And maybe AI is part of the solution to do that.
Somebody said to me, AI is only limited by human imagination.
Right.
And I ask every single guest, okay, we know what it's going to do for the industry. We know what it can do for the world. We're having these discussions this week. But I've asked this question to around 16 people now and had a unique answer every single time.
Oh, maybe I should take my headphone off. Yeah. So I don't hear what she says.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But Laura, for you as an individual in your everyday life, what are you using generative AI for?
So in a work context, we are using it this year for the first time on Contact Us pages on our website. There's an AI-enabled chat bot to help people who need help registering or getting around the show floor, those sorts of things. So it is, to a large degree, propping up our customer service element of this program. There are lots of plans to use it further over the course of the next year, but that's really the main one for us, and it's really relevant to this show. In my personal life, I haven't even started using it yet.
Okay. Well, you're very busy, so the two kind of intertwine, I guess.
And I will tell you that I come here, this year especially, you come here, you get really, really inspired by what you see, but I'm a writer by trade. I'm a communicator.
Right.
So I have a tiny resistance to trying it because I don't want to know it's better than me stringing words together, but we'll see.
Gil?
Well, Amdocs aside, because we are all in. I think it could be interesting to talk about how we, my organization, the marketing organization, has embraced AI. I would dare say, without offending anybody, even before the Amdocs technology people implemented it, because we, the first capabilities that were available were more, let's say, lending themselves to the marketing domain, because it's about writing, content creation, and imagery, which is a big part of what we produce. And we, and this, what you see behind us, this entire booth, was produced by my internal team, unlike previous teams where we had to hire graphic designers and video editors and video art creators and everything. So the amount of work that we do on the marketing side, which is supported by generative AI, has been profound. It's not necessarily that now we need 90% less people. By definition, almost we are understaffed, but now we can handle bigger loads. And we can produce more, and we can be more cost efficient, and we can be more original. I think if you look at this booth, again, without, of course, I'm promoting it, but I think the imagery that you see is not something that you would see in any image bank, right? You wouldn't find it because we created it based on our prompts. So I think that for marketing teams all over the world, I think that's a major leap forward. On a personal basis, which how it started this journey, I use it for my vacations, I use it for research, I use it for image creation during presentation making. I use it all over. I do have to say that I actually found a very interesting and ordained reason for friction why a lot of people don't use it. Many IT departments are blocking the access to ChatGPTs in the office because of security concerns, which are true. But it's like your employees have the power or have the access to be super employees, and you're blocking it. So stop, solve the security issues, and give them access. And I think that's like people between 9 to 5, so to speak, cannot use generative AI. It's like between 9 to 5, your employees will be slow. I don't think so. So I think that's a big, small, but big thing.
It is a small, but big thing. It's a really big thing.
And I would ask you a question, Gil.
Go ahead.
So generative AI is everywhere.
Yeah.
When I get back to Canada, back to Oakville, I will be talking to my children about generative AI for probably the next month. It'll certainly help them get to sleep.
I am not a robot.
I'll be just doing interviews with them. They'll say, "Mummy, Daddy's lost it." But what else have you seen at the show other than generative AI, Gil? Because it's everywhere. It's
It's interesting. And it hit me maybe on day 2, which was yesterday, right? In the previous years... And I've been going to the show for a very long time, since 2006, I think, consecutively.
Thank you for that.
Wow. I started in the startup booths and I ended up here now. In the last few years, 5G and the 5G banner was everywhere. Now look around you, even visually, you don't see the like words 5G, but what you do see are the use cases. So I think it's really cool as an industry that we're not just shouting the buzzword and talking about the frequency, because nobody cares from a customer perspective. They care about what they can do. And I think what you see around are all the mature applications that people figured out how 5G can enable, that 5G can enable. And I think that's super cool. It's like, it's the real thing. So beyond 5G, it's not 6G. It's the implementation of real use cases, valuable use case in real life.
And when did you, Laura, when did you, as an organization and as the CMO of the GSMA, realize that this was going to be the thing at the show? Because it must... Mm. Or, when did it sort of... When did you say to your team, hey, it's going to be all Gen AI this year? When did it occur to you?
So we start planning for next year's edition now.
Right.
And so we focus on themes all year long. We have the benefit of the GSMA of having a membership base. And many working groups. And so we have voices and conversation all year long where themes and topics are bubbling up all the time, all the time, all the time. We, in the summer before this edition, so let's call it July 23,
yeah,
started having serious conversations around what does the tagline for the show need to be? So we decided on Future First. That then begins to kind of cast our vision forward into what are the themes for speaking? And as we looked around, as we listened in on those conversations from members, AI was just, it's just undeniable at the moment.
Yeah. And everybody knew, right? We all, you know, you didn't have to use generative AI to know that generative AI was going to be here. But I've never seen anything quite like it. And I think if I quote you correctly here, Lara, you said it's a step change in humanity.
100%.
Yeah.
I remember, so I'm newer to this industry. I come out of financial services and energy, broadcast a little bit. When we were talking about the metaverse last year, I thought that was the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like that conversation went off of a cliff. Now, I'm not making a declaration there about the technology or the use cases for the metaverse. That's still important technology, Web3 stuff. But it's just AI feels much more pervasive.
Yes.
Than that conversation.
And it's cross-industry.
And it's
all the way down to education. And you talked about before, and I actually be interested in something that we exchanged online. The issue is education will need to be different, because in the past you had to study mathematics, then maybe do a degree in computer science, and then become a developer, and then be able to be like, this is your path to the industry. Now you just have to learn good English. And you can be a developer. Now you don't have to be. So the education system will definitely, or hopefully most likely, change. And what we talked about in one of the panels, Never Too Young to Lead, which I participated in, the question that I was asked was, how do we open up this industry to make it accessible for young people? And I commented, something that I think you should or can help on, is that we're kind of a closed club, right? Nobody outside our industry is in the show who's not a professional, who didn't pay a lot of money, who flew specifically. And I would say not identical, but similar shows like CS are open to the public. So maybe we can have a week of and then a week of, right? A week of open and a week. But do you think that's kind of necessary to get the talent that we want in our industry versus other industries?
Absolutely. But I think there are some things that we've done in the last couple of years, and I can talk about some things we're doing on the show floor this year.
Okay.
So that panel existed because we wanted to bring that diverse thinking to the show floor. 45% of our speakers are women, which is an astronomical number compared to where we've been in the past. It's a reflection of our intentionality and also the direction of travel in the industry. We've got a talent arena on the show floor, which is sponsored by Mobile World Capital, which is that foundation in Barcelona that keeps the MWC conversation going all year long. And that talent arena brought in young developers who were confronted with challenges and tried to solve them on the spot with the intention of introducing them to prospective employers. We've also got a DevCon on the floor relative to Open Gateway. So there are ways that we're opening this platform up so that it's less mobile ecosystem and more future-first digital transformation and everybody impacted with that. Having said that, imagine the opportunities that AI opens up from an education perspective, where just little girls have been counted out of STEM for years because we've been told we're not good at math.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What if you didn't have to believe that anymore? Because maybe that barrier either gets removed or how you learn it changes.
Absolutely.
And how you interact with it. And so we can bring new voices to the table all the time. But that there's an intentionality in our program that I think we have a moral imperative to continue building out.
Yeah.
And then I'm just super excited about the impacts of AI on things like education.
I think one of the most exciting things that are happening with this technology is that the opportunities in the past were based many times on circumstance. So where you were born and the circumstance of, you know, the family you were born into and the capabilities they had pretty much dictated what you could do. And yes, you could work super hard and close the gap But if you had to be with your parents in their small, medium business and help them and not go to high school or maybe skip a day or two and not and then you kind of, you know, your studies weren't excellent, and then the university you got accepted to was maybe a mid-tier and not the higher tier. And then that kind of, the domino many times started when you were young. I think the technology will give everybody superpowers that will enable them truly to be what they can be. So I don't think it's like level the playing field, because I don't think that's what we're striving for. We want talent to be what it can. And there are some people who will be always better than others, but I think it really will give people opportunities worldwide to be whatever they can, whatever they want to be, because they can be a developer, they can be a designer, even though they didn't study mathematics and computer science, or they didn't study graphic design software. So I think that's amazing future potential. And yes, we have to take care of all the ethical part of it and regulate it somehow without killing it. And I think we as an industry have to make sure connectivity is available everywhere, because that's like the table stakes. And hopefully, I think we're getting there, and I think we're also getting the help of also transmissions from above Earth to help us get real coverage, and I think that will make it even more interesting. So I'm super hopeful and optimistic for the future. Do you feel like if you had to weigh it, more dangers versus more a potential, how would you like rate it?
Oh, I love that question. 95% of the world's covered by a mobile network network. So I wouldn't call that a solved problem, but we're well on the way to solve. So you're right, access isn't the problem. It's those underlying issues related to usage, it's hardware, et cetera. How I feel about the future is inspired and excited. I think I've met here over the course of the week regulators and policymakers who are working together with business on the issues of regulation and ethics, which you're right. There's a tension between wanting innovation and recognizing that it needs some regulatory framework to keep us safe.
The regulators get it?
Absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely. I mean, regulators that I've spoken to this week see the responsibility they have, but they also see the opportunity to solve some of the problems they have in their own countries relative to size of workforce, availability of workforce,
talent,
that sort of thing. So I think I'm very inspired by the conversations that happen in a place like this. MWC is a really unique combination of, you mentioned CES earlier.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous thing when a marketer starts using comparison to explain their product, but a little bit, this is like a CES combined with a WEF, combined with a UN. Mm-hmm. That's what MWC is. So it's one place to come and have all of those conversations.
That really makes it very unique. That worked.
Right?
That explanation worked. So.
Okay, good. Excellent. And I think that's the unique formula that is MWC. So you're having all the sides of the conversations here, as opposed to maybe a one-sided conversation. Yeah. And I feel really inspired by the whole thing and really grateful to get to be a part of it.
Wow. It's wonderful. And it's a very optimistic. We're almost out of time, Nora, and I'm conscious that you have a lot of
that was fast.
We could talk here all day. And,
yeah. Really good.
And it's wonderful to have you back. And you know how we finish these things, if you recall.
You remember.
Yeah, the TGI to go. So I had to go back through all the questions we asked you before and make sure we don't repeat them, because that would be a bit monotonous. So we've got some nice, fresh TGI to go questions for both of you.
Okay.
Awesome.
And so let's do it.
TGI to go.
Can or Nice?
Can.
Yeah. Did you ever attend MWC when it was in Cannes?
No, but they're both beautiful spots, so yes. I don't think you can get their question really wrong. No, and I'm going to Cannes in a couple of months.
Ah, right.
You know, so I was in, I can tell when was my first year in MWC, because it was the first year after Cannes.
Yeah, 2006 then.
Six, yes. Yeah. So that was, so I still have to go there, so that will be my answer.
Would you rather watch sci-fi or a good comedy?
A good comedy.
Have you seen any good comedies recently? Any recommendations for my long flight back home?
No.
I think we're living sci-fi, so I would go with comedy.
That was very smooth. That was cool. I like that. Beyonce or Taylor Swift? Are you a Swiftie?
I don't lean in either of those directions, but I have to say that both women are powerhouses, right? It's easy to respect both of them. What Taylor Swift has done this year, though, whether you like her or her music or not, I appreciate her tenacity. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the way that she speaks about hard things, respectfully but directly. Mm-hmm. And I do think that she is a role model.
Yeah, it's really good. And, you know, when you talk about her resilience and her hard work, you know, I do a week full of podcasts and that feels tough. The amount of concerts she's done on that tour is insane.
Yeah, so when the next time you complain, I'll say, but Taylor doesn't.
But Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Everything that Lara said, I completely agree with. She's an amazing personality and she's, wow. A person going against the industry that supports her and actually winning and then going to the next level is nothing less than amazing. But you wouldn't catch me listening to her songs. Not because I don't like them. I mean, they're a cool song. It's just not my type. Beyonce, I love the Verizon commercial. And I think that
was it. That was in my mind when we drafted that one. Because we've had Verizon here this week and their Super Bowl Beyonce campaign was incredible. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Incredible. Yeah. And my final question, but I think you've given me an answer already. If you're going to take a vacation after the show to recuperate, would you go to Thailand or Antigua?
I would go to Antigua because I need to sleep.
You need to sleep. But you said you were going to the south of France, right?
Yes, so. That's true. That's for work.
But that's business. Oh, yeah. Okay. Girl.
I'll pick Maldives. I know you didn't ask, but I'm answering.
That's okay.
That's the direction, the Maldives.
Somewhere restful.
I need I need white sand, I need blue, and then I need nothing else in between, and that's it.
Yeah. And a nice cocktail, maybe.
No, yeah, exactly. So I want to thank you, Laura. I want to thank you, Gil.
Thank you, Matt.
I want to say congratulations on just a stunning show this
Amazing.
Year.
Amazing.
Absolutely stunning.
I want to add to that, by the way. Yeah. So, you know, as a organization, of course, as a company, we go to and we are asked to participate in many. This is the Super Bowl. You know, this is where this is the, also from as a marketing organization, this is the biggest event that we partake in. We love the vibe. As we finish this week, my head is already, how can we top this year? And I was thinking the same the year before, and I was thinking the same. So it always challenges us, which is what we love, to be challenged. And I love the venue. And so thank you for keeping it up so good and pushing us to bring even more every year.
Thank you. I'm super inspired by what you guys do and appreciate the opportunity to chat, and very glad that Amdocs is a significant part of that vibe. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Amazing.
Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Matt.
So I'm really pleased to welcome my two guests. We have Natalie Olson, who's the head of government and innovation at Startup Sherpas. And I'm joined by a fellow Brit. His name is Hugo Pickford-Wardle, and he's the founder of Startup Sherpa. So welcome to The Great Indoors, both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's exciting to be here.
Good. I'm glad you're excited. And for our listeners, Natalie, just give a brief history of yourself, if you will, and your current role that you're trying to achieve with Startup Sherpas.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've actually lived all over the world. Which I'm very fortunate about. I live between Barcelona and Palo Alto, California now. And like I said, many companies, different stages of my life. I've been in the government. I was in the Foreign Service. I've been a diplomat for a long time. And then I got the call from President Obama to come and be the SBA regional administrator and be his advisor for innovation and competitiveness. It's been 7 years of...
I said we were going to bring it home in style. I didn't know we were going to go that far, but that's wonderful. Wow.
Yeah.
Hugo, you got the call from David Cameron, right?
I got many calls. None like that. Definitely not that. But we did actually meet Natalia in Barcelona when we came in November, and actually just seeing how excited that she is, having all of those experiences and understanding that what we're doing is actually important, mm-hmm. and that we need to take it across the globe, has obviously made me buzz with excitement. And coming here again to Barcelona to Mobile World Congress, and just seeing the appetite that everybody has for supporting us and supporting the teenagers to be able to actually learn the skills that they need in a world that is hugely complex with massive problems. So I think that it's a real testament to humanity that even when we kind of see what's going on in the world, everyone's really excited about what can come next if we all work together.
Yes. So just tell me, if you will, what is Startup Ship, essentially?
So we're a mission-driven business. We're aiming to create a whole generation globally of teenagers who have the skills of innovation and entrepreneurship so they can go and solve the big hairy challenges that our world has. Things like climate change, like equality, food systems. Yeah. They're all really, really complex problems to solve. They're systemic issues. And so we just teach teenagers how to do that by paying them cash.
Right. Okay.
When they're 13 years old,
yes.
Work experience.
Yeah.
Turns out that all teenagers globally love getting cash.
I don't know. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and I give her $5. She won't clean her bedroom, but maybe I need to up that that incentive.
Well, I think there is a difference because we're luckily not a parent,
right,
or a teacher.
Okay,
we're an employer, and so we set out those rules at the start.
Right.
I mean, I also have a 14-year-old, and
right.
They still want the cash. They just don't do the things for the cash.
But why teenagers then? Why are you targeting teenagers?
So what we see is that there is an issue that we go around different industries. Cyber's a great example. You know, there's massive skill shortages, and I go and speak to leaders of those industries saying, hey, we can't get the talent. And then I go and speak to teenagers and they say, we've got no opportunities, there are no jobs.
Wow.
And both of those things can't be true at the same time.
Right.
So what we realise is that if we get to teenagers before their career, then we're going to be able to actually get them to be ready to go into the world of work. So you'll actually find they'll go to an interview, they have a CV with experience on it from companies that people recognise, and suddenly it actually helps solve that problem.
Oh, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, especially, you know, here in Europe and across the UK as well. In the days that I remember when I was a kid, I could actually, in the US, deliver newspapers. And then I used to work at my grandpa's hardware store, and he has a gas station, and I got tips, and I love the idea of getting my own money, and I had that independence. And so I come to speak about entrepreneurship here a lot, and they want to go ahead and have scientists and engineers start companies, and they haven't had any training. So if you don't start when they're younger, you know, from 13-year-olds to 19-year-olds, and getting them into that mindset, we're not saying we want you all to start companies. What we're saying is that we want you to start thinking of how you're going to commercialize. How are you going to solve big problems? And that entrepreneurial mindset is what gives those folks those ideas, and they can think outside the box. And, you know, for example, in Virginia and near Washington, D.C., we are lacking like 50,000 people for 50,000 types of jobs in cybersecurity.
Right.
And software. That's a big thing for us. And, you know, Amdocs, you guys are doing such a great job here in that sense. But the talent is what's needed. And I can't seem to inspire people unless I get them early. And that's why Startup Sherpas is unbelievable. Their business model is great.
And that was going to be my next question. Is there a specific technology? You're at a technology show that, you know, that A, you want to focus on, or B, the teenagers are more interested in? And C, is this a global initiative or something based in Europe or the United Kingdom?
Yep, great question. So first of all, what we do is when we're getting a teenager who's 13 years old, if we think about technology stacks, then we work it back to technology, then we work it back to STEM. Actually, what we're doing is getting all of the teenagers who haven't identified themselves as being interested in STEM actually interested in STEM.
Okay.
So we call it the Fight Club approach, right? The first thing you do, don't talk about it.
Yeah.
So we don't talk about, hey, come and work in cyber. We talk about the anti-scam squad.
Yeah.
So how can you help your friends stop being scammed on social media and get paid for it and come up with ideas in it? And then we can drip feed the content through. So we're like an amplifier for all of the initiatives. That there's a huge number of different small initiatives that everyone's doing. We're just a massive amplifier to that, saying, actually, the problem with the number of teenagers that you're getting engaged is that if you do, a STEM project in school, or if you do Girls Who Can Code, or if you do Technology Stack X for these types of students, you're assuming that they already have some idea of that. And our advisor, Dr. Professor Gerd Graus, has a lovely simple statement he makes, which is children can only aspire to what they know exists.
Yeah.
It's beautiful because it's true.
Yeah.
And the problem is that there is no way for teenagers to understand what exists in the world unless they get experiences.
Yeah.
And the current model of work experience is really, it's location-based.
Yeah.
It's office-based. And then obviously COVID happened.
Yeah.
You guys created this podcast.
Yeah, but that was a big moment for COVID.
Definitely for COVID. And actually, it started to shift the dial and kind of people starting to realize that we can do something that's deployable globally, remotely. So we focus on teaching them remote work and asynchronous work. So wherever they are in the world, whenever it's on their schedule, then that's when they're participating. Because we have students who are caring for their ill parents.
Yeah.
We have students doing horse riding lessons.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they're doing. It's just that we actually give them the permission and the tooling to be able to do that on their own terms.
That's really cool. And something came up in a conversation yesterday that I'd like to share with you that's really pertinent to this. So yesterday we had Laura Dewar, who's the CMO of the GSMA, the Chief Marketing Officer, if you know Laura. And she was joined by my boss, the Chief Marketing Officer of Amdocs, and we had a conversation. And something Laura said to me a year ago when we interviewed her here in Barcelona was, one of my initiatives is to get more young people into the show, right? And then Gil spoke on a panel about, how do we do that? How do we do that? Could something that be really beneficial to them is to bring them into the show?
Exactly.
Like, look at these booths. Look at the demonstrations. Look at... If I, going back to my youth as a 13-year-old coming in and seeing this, that would give me a huge amount of inspirational, the ability to converse and to see everything's going on. That could be something that would really propagate this initiative, right?
100%. So actually, Marta, one of our teenagers, has come with us.
Okay.
So she's on our startup program. She's created an amazing robot spider that replants trees when there's been a forest fire.
Wow.
So the places that the other machines can't actually get to,
yes,
she can scramble up there and replant them at a rate faster than most of the machines do. She's amazing.
Wow.
And
she's 18 years old.
Right. Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But, teenagers are at peak creativity. Bringing them to a show like this is actually an immersive work experience. And so I think it's an absolutely critical thing to do. For them to get the most out of it, they actually need to build their confidence before they come. A lot of the programs that we see haven't done the bit of onboarding students. They kind of go, there you go.
They tease them a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Tease them as in ridicule them, but,
Yeah, they're just giving them a little taster.
Yeah.
What we found is that when we get teenagers to do individual work that's really... very well defined in what we're asking them to do. The rules are very clear and obvious. Their confidence builds really quickly in even really complex domains. So whether you telco is complex, right? You're having to think about kind of a whole system, networks, technology. It's really complex. It's also entirely hidden from anyone in the general public.
Yeah.
Apart from obviously the consumer part of the mobile phones, but the really complicated stuff. When we get them to actually start exploring that on their own, before even working as part of a team of other teenagers, they go from the start of our program and say, why are you paying me cash? Are you a scam? Number one question we get asked by teenagers, are you a scam?
Right.
Six weeks later, it's who owns the IP of my ideas?
Wow.
And the confidence build in that time from going that they couldn't imagine anyone paying them for their ideas through to being concerned with who owns the IP. It was just an amazing journey for them to go on. Once they've done that, when they come and get immersed in a world like this, they're ready to ask really good questions because they've actually already got the confidence that they can go up to anyone on these stands. It's actually, if we just dump them in, it's intimidating beyond belief.
Yeah.
If you go around and ask the adults here, how intimidating they find it.
It is, yeah.
I think they'd probably say the same.
Yeah, it is intimidating. It's stressful and it's hard work.
Tiring.
And I mean, you know, so that's
and awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have a really good point. Here, actually, at the mobile, I know that GSMA is trying to get more young people. Some high school kids are coming in, as well as the other big conferences like Smart City Expo and so on. There's great initiatives to start rolling them in, but you can't just dump them here because we want them to take the most out of it. You know, a ticket here is expensive. Mm-hmm. Being here is expensive, but we want to be able to expose the kids here in Barcelona to this, right? Especially because there's, you know, Barcelona is one of the big tech hubs of Europe, and there's a lot of talent here and a lot of young kids. So we want those companies, those corporates, to maybe sponsor or figure out how we can all work together to get more kids, because they're the ones who need the talent.
Yeah.
Right? These are the kids that, when we talk about cybersecurity jobs, they don't seem to be that interested. But when we talk about how, you know, you can get hacked, or gaming and things like that, and all the infrastructure behind that, now they start getting.
So once you've selected the individual, you then place them, right? Is that correct?
So actually, we run the program. We've built a technology platform.
Right.
So we actually run all the work experience, because one of the issues with work experience is that getting 100 teenagers onto your site in the real world is a safeguarding, logistical, health and safety nightmare.
Right.
So if you put them on payroll in addition to that, you basically it's a no-go. So we actually separate out the concerns of doing all of that, which is what we do, managing the teenagers and allowing them the process to be able to go through our e-doing platform. And then the company can engage at certain points and can then get access to all of the ideas and data from the students. So it just makes it easy.
Mm-hmm.
We decided it needs to be easy for companies to say, yes, we'll go and do that work experience.
Yeah. Now,
for example, companies like insurance companies.
Right.
So they have actually really been one of the best clients, one of your first clients, because they look at it from an ESG perspective, right, and a social value perspective.
Yes.
And because they also are the companies that need to assure that climate change and other topics are actually being done. And there's also, when you talk to teenagers, you want to go and work for a big insurance company? They're like, maybe not.
Yeah.
So, but if you put it in the context of look at what they're cool things that they're working on, then you get that. So insurance companies have been really great clients because they are actually building that capacity talent for the future.
Yeah. So I think the benefits, the objectives are incredible. They're admirable in many ways on this issue. But what's the business model? How do you sustain this? What's the economics behind it, basically?
So it's really interesting that we decided to be a company that is a profit-making company that does social good. So we're a social enterprise. And that's the model that we actually want to demonstrate can be hugely profitable. Business model is very simple, that our corporate partners have three objectives. That scalable S in the ESG is a nightmare for a lot of organizations. So that's often what's driving our corporate partnerships in the first instance. You know, we have a financial return for the investment, it's auditable, it can be put into audited reports that they have to do.
Yeah.
And that is something that is rare to find. So that's been a real driver. But what we did is we built the true impact business case. We're saying, actually, yes, you want to go and do that good. Yes, you want to report on it. But actually, you also want it to be business critical to do that at the same time. So we integrate with the early talent programs, make sure that they've actually got the routes through into that organization. And then there's the other part of it, which is, I mean, I'm actually an innovation geek.
Right. Okay.
And the reason I did this in the first place was to make a better innovation process. So if an innovation team can work with 100 diverse future customers and get them to do that work.
Or even employees.
Employees, if they're innovating the workspace, whichever one it is.
Yeah.
It's a better process. You're going to get a wider diamond in the double diamond design process because you'll get ideas further away from the edges. I always love the students who seem to just go completely off the rails and they're not even answering the question that we set. because they're at the edges, right? What they feed into the group work that happens is just a randomness. Like an algorithm needs that randomness to be able to actually work really effectively. And so once they have actually a financial return from social impact, a financial return from talent, and then the future-proofing in through innovation and insights, it's a really strong business case. Now what we're doing, with Natalia on board, is we're looking at how do we actually bring that into a public-private partnership so that we can get whole ecosystems working together. That's why we're so focused on cyber. We realized, so we worked with the UK Tax Office and started to create the UK's Cyber Talent Accelerator. So we said, actually, we can take a student on a journey from don't want to work in cyber, don't even know what it is, and we can take them through a series of our squads on a junior apprenticeship that can feed them directly into the industry. And then we can also offer them our startup program so they can create cyber startups. So any location that has a cluster of cyber startup or cyber activity, we can actually provide the talent pipeline into that.
And, you know, things like precision agriculture, like in places that are remote in Africa and so on, trying to figure out how much water those crops need. And that all the technology behind that, you know, young people don't understand how to get to it. And, you know, so at the same time, those politicians, those government leaders, they need that. They need for their younger community to understand that if we actually have this, we have less conflict, less friction, and we have more access. So. In many ways, it's a win-win situation.
Now, we're almost out of time. But but we're not finished just yet, right? I think what you're doing is fantastic. I think there's a really great conversation there. But we finish with our quickfire TGI to go round, where our listeners can learn a little bit more about you. And we finish on a high then, and it's fun, and that's how we do it. TGI to go. Okay. Here we go. Natalie, you're first. Basketball or football?
Basketball.
Yeah? Yes. What's your team?
Oh, wow. The 76ers from Philadelphia.
Okay. Oh, right. Cool. we've got a lot of our team in Philadelphia, and they like to go there. Basketball or football? Not US football. Like, I can switch that one around. UK football, of course, soccer.
UK football.
Yeah? Do you have a team? You?
I have an 11-year-old who is madly passionate about Manchester United.
Oh, we're going to have to turn everything up for us. I'm a Liverpool supporter. We struggle a little
this
bit.
This is where the awkwardness kicks in.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I did go to Liverpool Uni as well.
Oh, did you? Oh, right. Okay. Well, I'm from near Chester originally.
Okay.
So in those neck of the woods.
I'm up there next week.
Oh, are you? Yeah. Oh, cool. It's a beautiful city. Right. You're flying home, Natalie, on your long flight back to Palo Alto. Would you watch a drama or a comedy on your flight?
I usually watch comedies.
Could you recommend one for my Atlantic stretch via Amsterdam?
Oh, one that I have seen. Whoa. I like a lot of rom-coms, a lot of romantic comedies.
Okay.
Are you keen on rom-coms?
I'm not, but my wife is, and she's probably having a rom-comedy binge while I've been here. I think Julia Roberts and...
Yeah. Bridget Jones is one of my favorites.
Oh, Bridget Jones. Yeah. It's a nice movie.
Sex and the City is great.
Sex and the City. Yeah. I haven't seen Sex and the City, but again, that's on the binge list, I think, for my wife. Yourself, Hugo?
I'll definitely go comedy as well.
Yeah? Can you recommend?
Currently, I'm watching Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's quite interesting because there's that link between Breaking Bad and Malcolm in the Middle, and you start to see some of the elements of the character being formed in that, as well as Laughing Ass Off.
One thing I miss living in Canada is British comedy, of course.
Yes.
Alan Partridge, I was a fan of. And, of course, we don't get any of that. But
you say you were a fan of him. You're not allowed to be anymore?
No, I still am a fan, but I can't get it on for the amount of Sex in the City that's going on at any one point in time. So I'll be banished to the basement with my tablet to do that.
We've had a lot of tapas this week, haven't we?
Oh, yes.
So once you get home, Natalie, you have the choice of Japanese or Thai food. Where would you go with that one?
Thai food. I love Thai food.
Yeah.
I spent a month in Thailand and I took a couple cooking classes. I love to cook, so.
Excellent. Yeah. That sounds interesting.
Thai food is spicy and it's
cool.
It's good.
Hugo?
Is fusion a choice? Because those are both awesome options. I'm going, maybe I'll go for fusion, a few Thai flavours on some Japanese. I mean, that is very sort of West Coast Canada, I think, the fusion flavours anyway.
Yes, for sure.
But, maybe some nice sushi.
Yeah, nice. Now, we've all...
Hungry.
No, we're in... I always ask that question around this time of day. The next question... And I've had some funny responses with this. We're almost at the end of the show. And I've had a very long week. And I'm going to have... I think the bar will be open soon. But would you have a sangria or a cava?
I would have a cava.
Yeah?
Because Catalonia is the biggest producer of cava.
Yeah,
95%. Yeah. It's really good.
And have you had much cava this week?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I also have a home in Barcelona.
Oh, of course.
So I do come a lot. Okay. And the cava is amazing.
Yeah. I asked one of our guests, have you had any cava this week? She went, every day. It's the only way I can get through this thing. Which was quite funny. Yes. Same question to you, Hugo.
I'd go sangria.
Yeah?
A bit fruity.
Yeah. And have you had some this week? I'm sure you have.
No, I've just been drinking beer.
Oh, really?
Trying to keep it clean.
Yeah.
Beer
yeah.
from morning through noon.
Yeah, that's a good way of keeping it clean. My final question, Star Trek or Star Wars? So we're at an end. We're bang on time. I've really enjoyed the conversation with you. Thank you for swinging by. Thank you for working with Larissa to get the appointment. And Natalie, great to meet you, Hugo. I think what you're doing is fantastic. And hopefully we'll see you here again in 12 months.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
What a fantastic way to start this new special edition season. And the episodes will keep coming each week with the same energy, enthusiasm, and passion for the industry and for MWC. So please subscribe to our podcast on all the usual podcast channels. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts and enjoyed the show, please rate and review. Also visit our website, amdocs.com/thegreatindoors for all past episodes, video content related to the series. Now we'll be back next week for more great conversations. And until then, I'm Matt Roberts for Amdocs in Barcelona. Have a great day wherever you are.